Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. This show will first be broadcast on Wednesday, June 5th, 2024, on 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician. My co-host, Ron Meniza, is at the Best Buddy Ride right now. We're coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprouts. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live and Instagram Live episode at FranStorchND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. All right, getting set up here. I got a pillow to rest my iPad on. Fun day today. I've been having some issues with my knee. I think I have a medial collateral ligament strain, and I started feeling bad a couple of Thursdays ago, and I had to go to a conference and walk around the conference with this painful right medial collateral ligament or meniscus or who knows. I'm thinking maybe it's a sprained strain because it got better pretty quick. If it was my meniscus, I think there would be a lot more inflammation and it would have taken a longer time. But like with the right care, it got better. So what did I do for my sprained strain? I taped it. I used KT tape. So I'm really a fan of kinesio tape. I do very well with it. I really prefer it to braces. And people have said to me, why don't you wear a brace on your knee? And the thing with braces, like if you wear a neoprene brace, those braces tend to be heavy. They don't conform to my knee as well as the tape does. When you put the tape on, you put it in specific spots and you can move very well with it. And you feel this nice support without your knee feeling constrained and constricted. And it really feels nice. I'm always impressed with whenever I've taped anything. And so mostly I've taped knees. I have taped the back of my legs when I have posterior knee pain, but the tape doesn't tend to stay on. Fortunately, I did have some posterior knee pain, and the posterior knee pain did resolve, and so I'm very glad about that. And the pain seemed to stay mostly confined to the medial side of my right knee, but the medial means the side of my knee closer to the middle of my body. The outside of the knee is called the lateral side. It was quite painful a couple of weeks ago when I was at the CNPA conference, and it gradually got better. I had acupuncture a week ago Friday, and my acupuncturist put needles in the actual knee and it reacted, and I had a lot of inflammation after that, and I could barely walk after the treatment, and I could barely walk for a day after that, and I had to recover from that. So sometimes when you're treating a knee with acupuncture, you can't put the needles right in the knee because the knee is sensitive. But you can treat the knee without putting the needles right in the knee, which is what Nicole did. So that part of the knee, she said, is along the kidney meridian. And she said, you're exhausted. She was right. And she said, I should be treating your kidney meridian. This is part of why this happened. And I'm like, that makes sense to me. So she did kidney meridians in other places. She put a couple of needles yesterday above the knee, and then in other places on my body and the kidney meridian, and knee's much better today. So much better that I got back on the bike. Not only did I get back on the bike, I rode 34 miles. I said to her, I'm really hoping to ride the bike tomorrow. And she said, so how long are you gonna ride the bike for? And I said, well, 34 miles. I would not have ridden 34 miles if it wasn't a scheduled club ride. And I figured, well, it's 34 miles, but it's not that much climbing. I mean, it's not Central Jersey climbing, and it's not Central Connecticut. It's not, what you call it, Tobacco Flats of Connecticut climbing. But we were supposed to climb 1,800 feet. I joked with my friend Larry that we were going to climb high 100 feet, but we wound up climbing 2,000 feet. Oh, well, but I made it through. I was very excited. I was very excited that being off the bike for that long, that I had something in the tank to be able to make it through the ride. So, and really, if I don't get to ride my bike, I am not a happy camper. Yoga is wonderful and it does make me feel better, but I kind of need cycling and yoga. I need them both. I need that intense cardio. I need to be outside. I need to be with my friends. All the things that cycling gives you, I really need that. Really good for my brain. I'm just so much happier today now that I rode my bike. And then tomorrow, I will probably talk to Ron about, see how he's feeling, because he's still recovering from his evolocumab injury. And he went to the Best Buddies ride, and he's riding on he rode on a tandem bike with the same gentleman that he rode with last year, which was wonderful, Gabe. And I hope he had a wonderful time and that they got some great photos, because they got great photos last year that was so good that they used them for publicity. So it'll be great to see him home. He's going to come home later today. I just thought I'd get in an extra show, because I have some Mondays that I'm going to be working in, and then after that away, because it's June and we go places. Go figure, right? So the Kinesio tape, you can get whatever brand you like. This is not KT Tape brand. There are numerous brands. You can get drugstore brand, whatever drugstore you're going to sells their own brand of Kinesio tape, and you can save a few bucks. You can certainly get branded KT tape. There are other brands as well. For me, because I like to wear the tape multiple days, and I like to shower with it, and I sweat on it, I get the tape that's branded Extreme. The different brands will have more Extreme tape. It just means it has heavier adhesive, and it sticks better. So if you can sweat on it, you can exercise with it, and you can even swim with it. I've used tape that isn't Extreme in the pool, and it's off my leg by the end of the swim, so it's not useful. But you can get tape that's water resistant. And it's just so effective. And it's nice to have a physical therapist or a practitioner who knows what they're doing apply tape, but you can do it at home for parts of my body that I can reach, which, like, again, I've only ever taped my own knee. You can access your knee, you can access your feet. You could access, if you have to tape your chest or maybe not really your shoulder. Once you're getting into taping an arm or a hand or your back, you need a friend or a loved one or a practitioner. So I had golfer's elbow at one point, and I don't play golf. So there's golfer's elbow is when you have a sprain strain at the tendons of the medial malleolus, which is the bone, the protuberance on your humerus, which is your upper arm bone. It's a protuberance there. There's a lot of muscles attached to it, and you can get sprain strains of that area. And when it's on the medial side, the side closer to your body, they call it golfer's elbow, because if those of you on Facebook Live and Instagram, you can see if you thrust your arm medially, you can pull this tendon. Tennis elbow, because you're going this way, you can get the tendon on the outside of your elbow, the lateral malleus. So when you have lateral malleolus pain, that's called tennis elbow. So I had golfer's elbow, and I got it probably from doing push-ups and also lifting myself on the bike to get out of the saddle. And so I pulled this tendon, and Ron taped it, and it did wonderfully. I was thrilled. So you can tape anything. You can tape any part of your body. But again, certain parts of your body you're not going to be able to reach. So when it's your lower extremity, and primarily in the front, you can do it to yourself. So knees and ankles and feet, you can probably tape yourself. Anything else, you need a buddy. You need somebody to do it for you. And you can get instructional videos online. It's obviously it's better to get a physical therapist or practitioner who knows what they're doing to tape you. But you can get informational videos online. That's how I have done it. And it's been successful for me. So I don't know if I can show you folks on Facebook Live and Instagram Live. Here's my knee. It's pretty taped up. I've got a supportive piece across the bottom of my kneecap, just under my kneecap, horizontally across. I've got a piece that I cut in half, and it's going up either side of my my thigh, and it goes, it's underneath, and then it crosses over that piece that's supporting my knee. And then I have a half piece that is going from the top, just above my kneecap, across that that medial collateral ligament tendon for direct support right where I need it. And it's been very useful. And I was able to read 30. It's amazing. I am more likely to tweak this thing doing yoga than I am riding my bike 34 miles. Probably because it's on the medial side. And when you ride your bike, you're riding in one plane. You're not twisting. The knee is always coming forward. So and the medial this ligament gets it gets hit when you twist your leg. So if I have to be really careful about twisting and straightening my leg too much when I'm doing yoga. So when I'm doing yoga, I've been doing gentle yoga. I may try to do a regular class again on Monday, a couple days from now. But I'm just doing stretchy yoga now, and I'm really trying to take care of the knee. Like if I can't straighten it all the way, if I feel any pain, I will bolster it up with a pillow or a bolster or a block. And I won't bend it as far as I usually bend it. If I'm doing twists, I'm trying not to do twisted roots, not twisting my legs over each other. If I do, I twist them lightly. And that's been working, but it's easier for me to twist it in yoga right now than riding 34 miles, which is great. One of the things they tell you when you have sprained strains of your knees and also meniscus issues, if you're not a candidate for surgery at this point, cycling is one of the things that helps it because it's a very easy thing that you can do. You can control how hard you're riding. You can certainly, they always recommend stationary bikes. I didn't do a stationary bike today, obviously. But stationary bike is what they usually recommend, and you could ride easily in one plane, and it provides strengthening and circulation for the knee. And I just wondered if once I got to a certain point, that it would be better for me to actually get on the bike than stay off it because, you know, again, you get circulation through the knee and you get strengthening benefits. I also have a bunch of exercises that I'm doing. I went on YouTube and I found some lovely physical therapists. One of them is an orthopedic surgeon and a physical therapist. And the orthopedic surgeon said something very interesting about meniscus tears. So she said, first of all, you know how, I don't know if I've talked about this before, but when you do an MRI of the spine, and so say you have sciatica, or you, in my case, I had femoral neuralgia. And if you look at my spine, my spine is a wreck. I mean, when I've had CAT scans for other reasons, I had a CAT scan, I don't know if it was 2 years ago, like in September of 22, because I thought I was having a kidney stone. So I had a CAT scan in the ER and they looked for a kidney stone. They said, you have no kidney stones, but the CAT scan came back and I read the report and I have spondylosis. So spondylosis just means that I have a messed up spine. My lumbar spine, that my lumbar spine has, I had an MRI a long time ago in 2011, and I have osteophytes and Schmorl's nodes and reduced disc height and, you know, deterioration of the discs, and it's a big mess. So one of the things that you read, and also my chiropractor, Paul Suez, had told me, is that you can look at an MRI and see that it's pretty bad, and it doesn't necessarily correlate to what the person is experiencing. You can have a messed up MRI and have no pain. You can have a not messed up MRI and have pain. So imaging does not necessarily correlate with nociception. Interesting, right? So in the case of the knee, I was very surprised to hear this because I didn't think this about the knee. I thought if you have a torn meniscus, you're in a mess. You're going to have surgery and that's that. But no. So the way it works is you have this cushioning of cartilage in your knee. You have the tibial plateau. So the tibia is the bigger. So you have your femur, which is the long bone that comes out of your hip and it goes down to your knee. And then you have a sesamoid bone, which is your knee pad. And a sesamoid bone is a floating bone. It's a bone that's not attached to other bones. It's attached by ligaments and it floats. So that's your kneecap is a sesamoid bone. You have another sesamoid bone in your elbow. So the kneecap is at underneath the femur, and then the femur is attached by ligaments to the ligaments and tendons to the tibia and fibula. And the tibia is the larger bone in your leg below your thigh. So let's back up a second. that thing below your hip, the whole thing is called the lower extremity. So when you say your leg, when you're talking anatomy, the leg is referring to the part of your leg that includes your shin and your calf. The leg is not the whole thing. The whole thing is called the lower extremity. The top part is called the thigh, and the part below the knee is the leg. So that's kind of an interesting tidbit, right? And so the thigh has the femur, and in front of the femur, you've got the quadriceps, and there's four quadriceps: vastus lateralis, vastus medialis, vastus intermedius, and there's one more that I can't remember. And then your hamstrings. So the job of the quadriceps is to straighten your leg. The job of the hamstrings, which are, and the hamstrings, there's biceps femoris, and there's a couple more of those too. The job of your hamstrings is to flex your leg, to bend your leg. And then you have more muscles. You have the gastrocnemius and the soleus, which are there to flex and point your feet. And you have more muscles down there. Anyway, so the tibia is the larger of the two legs, and it resides more laterally, which means on the outside of your leg, and the fibula is the smaller bone that's on the inside of your leg. So the tibia has a tibial plateau, and on top of that tibial plateau, you have cartilage, and you have these half rings, well, half discs of cartilage called the menisci, and there's two of them. There's a medial one and a lateral one. And what I learned from watching this nice orthopedic doctor talk about the meniscus is that just like in the lumbar spine, what you see on imaging does not necessarily correlate what's going on with nociception. Nociception is a word that means a pain sensation. So you can have meniscus tears and have no pain. In fact, by the time you're 60, I'm 60, by the time you're 60, you probably have some meniscus tears, and sometimes you may have pain and sometimes you may not. And if you have a lot of pain and you have a meniscus tear and it's just not going away and you're bone on bone, you might get it repaired. But this orthopedic doctor that I saw on YouTube said that they have done studies and shown that they had dummy studies versus studies where they actually repaired the meniscus, and there was not much difference in outcome. So it's perfectly reasonable to have a meniscus tear and try to improve what's going on with conservative means. So that's exciting to me. And certainly with a sprained strain, you can do that as well. And what do you do with a sprained strain? The first thing you do is rice. No, not eat rice. If you want to eat rice, if it makes you feel better, you could eat some rice. But rice is rest, ice, compression, and elevation. So I'm doing compression when I'm using the KT tape, but you can also compress with an ACE bandage, with a bandage of some kind, an ACE bandage, or you can use a brace. So that's a way to do compression. Rest, of course, you know, if you're doing, when it's very acute, it's a good idea to rest it. And so I stayed off the bike for a week and a half or 2 weeks or whatever it's been, or very minimally. I tried the knee out a couple days ago. I got on my trainer with very light resistance and spun for 20 minutes. I said, okay, I'm good. And then had the really good acupuncture treatment yesterday. And I'm like, okay, I'm good. And then I woke up this morning and I felt good. I didn't feel exhausted and my knee felt good. I'm like, I'm going on the ride. And I went on the ride. I was so happy. I got 17 miles out and I was fine. And I came back and I was also fine. I was dehydrated. And so I started not to feel well at the gathering. And then I finally left and came home and drank a whole bunch of stuff. I drank some electrolytes, drank a protein shake, drank water. Then it felt better. It got cool. That worked. So I was very happy about that. Anyway, so you can do conservative means to take care of your inflamed knee and see if that works. And you certainly can get care from other people. So I get adjusted by my chiropractor and he adjusts my knee. And I've always found knee adjustments very helpful. And then I have acupuncture. And again, because my knee was probably very acute when she put the needles in my knee, it was too much. And so now we know that when I have knee pain, especially if it's very acute, she can't put the needles in the knee. She has to be cognizant of what meridian is affected and then do meridian work around it. And that worked great. I'm so thrilled. I'm going to text her and tell her, great job, Nicole. I'm just so thrilled. And I thought to myself, if I have a good ride today, I'm going to text Nicole and thank her. You should always thank, when you go to your practitioners, you can go to your practitioners and tell them, oh, this hurts, this feels bad, And, we want to help you. We absolutely want to help you. But, it's really nice. It makes us feel really good if you reach out to us, if something worked and worked really well, and say, it's like me. I'm going to tell Nicole, you did this great acupuncture treatment on me. I woke up, I had energy, which is what I asked her for. I wanted, things to help my kidney meridians, and I wanted the knee pain gone. And it was, and I had a great day and a great ride. And I'm going to tell Nicole that's what happened. And it's going to make her feel good. So reach out to your practitioners. If they do something right, tell them that. We love hearing that stuff. It just makes it all worthwhile, especially when we're working a lot and we're exhausted and we're having, high needs patients who are, they're coming in with 20 things. And not that you shouldn't do that. It's perfectly fine if you come in and you have a lot going on. I don't want you to not come in, but we're human too. And it can be very stressful when that happens. So if we do something, if we do or say something to you to help you and it works, let us know, because it just fills us up. It makes us, it's less exhausting. It's nice to know that stuff. So anyway, I did kinesio tape. I did rest, ice. I have not been much of a believer in ice, but every PT tells you to do it. So when you're acutely inflamed, ice can be helpful because the ice will help to bring the inflammation down and help to send some of the excess circulation out of the area. And the thing to do is not to do it for super long. So you get an ice pack. I have some ice packs. You can get them at your drugstore and you keep them in the freezer and you pull them out when you need them. So, and then you can keep reusing them. So you don't have like a bag that has ice in it, which you can use too if you have a lot of ice. But I like the ice packs that you just keep in the freezer and just keep reusing. That's very useful. And they stay cold for as long as you need them to. So you're only supposed to do, when you're doing a session of ice, you're only supposed to do it for 15 to 20 minutes, or 10 to 20 minutes. So I've been doing 15, and when it's very acute, I'll do 15, and no more than 3 times a day. And then when it's not so acute, you don't do the ice anymore. Or you can do less ice. You can do alternating hot and cold. So you can do a hot compress, and you can get compresses that you can heat up in the microwave or heat up on your stove or however you want to heat it up. And put that on for it. And I like to do 3 minutes hot, 30 seconds cold, and alternate 3 times. So then you're getting a flushing action in between. You certainly can also take Epsom salt baths because the magnesium will get your nerves to relax and you might have less pain, and it'll help to get rid of some inflammation as well. So that's another thing you can do. And then you can also use all kinds of salve. So I have a tendon salve, and I talked to my herbalist who makes salves for me to sell. And I have a tendon salve that we put together, and it has goldenrod in it. And yes, goldenrod, I learned this from Susan Weed, who is an herbalist in Woodstock, New York. Goldenrod is a wonderful anti-inflammatory, and it's an anti-inflammatory topically for injuries. It's also an anti-inflammatory. You take it for colds and flu, and you can take it for you could drink goldenrod tea, and it will help you with inflammation inside your body. So you could take it, I could take some goldenrod tea now, or goldenrod tincture. Everybody thinks, oh, goldenrod, I'm allergic to that. I always sneeze when the goldenrod's up. Yeah, no. What Susan Reed has always taught me is that the goldenrod pollen is too big to hang out inside your nose. It's not what bothers people. What's bothering people is the ragweed that blooms at the same time. And the goldenrod is a wonderful plant to help you deal with the ragweed. And it's so plentiful, just growing in disturbed soil. It just grows like crazy. You can get goldenrod and make tincture and salves and all kinds of stuff. So my tendon salve has goldenrod in it. It also has rutabaga graveolens in it, rue. Rue is a great plant for helping to heal nerves, tendons and ligaments. And it also has comfrey, one of my favorites. Comfrey is great. It has allantoin in it, which is helpful for, it's helpful for skin. It's helpful for any surfaces, skin. You could drink it as tea. It's good for your stomach and your digestive tract. And it's also good for the Latin name for comfrey is symphytum. So it's good for mending, helping to mend bones. It's also good for helping to mend tendons. And you can do it topically. You can do it with a salve or comfrey oil. You can also make, if you have the dried herb, comfrey root, you can make a poultice out of it and put it on, and it will help things to feel better. So I haven't done the poultice. I don't have any dried comfrey, but I have been doing a salve that has that in it. And she also put teasel, dipsacus, in it. And people think of teasel as something that kills Lyme disease, and it is. But it also happens to be another herb that is good for healing bones and tendons. So there's some dipsacus, teasel, in that salve as well. So I've been using that. I've been using that regularly. And I also have a CBD salve. And the CBD salve is actually made by a company that's interested in sports. So it's a nice salve. It has like beeswax and olive oil in it. And then it also has some menthol in it and some CBD. There's controversy as to whether CBD can really help you topically. I have CBD oil, which I will sometimes take too. I find it very relaxing. So those can all be helpful. And then again, if you're having, I'm wondering if one of the reasons I healed fairly quickly, I'm taking lots of anti-inflammatory things. I'm taking so many because I'm dealing with the post-vaccine syndrome as well as getting over Lyme disease. So I'm taking things that reduce inflammation. NAC, N-acetylcysteine, is something that reduces inflammation. So all these things that I'm taking for Lyme and post-COVID vaccine syndrome, they all reduce various interleukins, so various parts of the inflammatory system. So I'm taking curcumin, I'm taking NAC, N-acetylcysteine, I'm taking quercetin, I'm also taking fish oil, MCT oil, and black cumin seed oil, and borage oil, all great anti-inflammatories. Fish oil, of course, has omega-3 fatty acids in it, and black cumin seed oil has some alpha-linolenic acid in it, and MCT oil helps to reduce inflammation. It's the medium-chain triglycerides, and borage oil has GLA, glamorganolenic acid, in it, which is also a prostaglandin calmer. So I'm taking all of those things, and they probably all help. I take magnesium as well. Magnesium is going to calm my muscles and calm me. Also found that, just by the way, I've found that if I get hyped up at work, I'm starting to feel a little shaky because I'm getting hyped up because I'm feeling a little anxious around a patient during patient care, I'll pop an L-theanine gummy, just 100 milligrams, and that really helps. And my distributors are not selling me the gummies anymore. So I'm just going to, when I finish the gummies, I'll either have to find another source or I'm going to just have to pop the pills. It's really easy to find L-theanine pills. There are a dime a dozen. But I find that just 100 milligrams, it calms me down. And if I do with the L-theanine and a little bit of CBD, it's great. It's really good. So if I'm feeling a little hyped and anxious. I wanted to take an L-theanine gummy before this podcast, but I couldn't find any in the house, so I'm going to get some more. And then you can take curcumin, you can take boswellia, which is frankincense. Boswellia is a wonderful anti-inflammatory. Rosemary as well. They have activity. Curcumin from turmeric calms down various interleukins, and rosemary and boswellia will calm down NF-kappa beta, which is another part of your inflammatory system. So there are various combinations you can get. I don't do boswellia because I found that boswellia seems to bother my stomach. I might try it again at some point. Another thing that tends to bother my stomach, which is a wonderful anti-inflammatory because it's proteolytic, it breaks down proteins, is bromelain. Bromelain is pineapple enzyme. It's very high in pineapple stems, which is where it's extracted from. And your stomach ache from is terrible because bromelain is so good for so many things. It's antimicrobial. You can kill bacteria. It's anti-inflammatory, proteolytic, and you can use it for when you have an injury because it'll break down enzymes. And bromelain is also one of the things used if you have elevated spike proteins, because spike proteins are proteins. So among the things you use to break down spike proteins, whether you have vaccine injury and suspected extra spike proteins in your body from the vaccine, or you have actual COVID-19, this is in PubMed. I got this from a study that's been published by the NIH. And so in this published study, it talked about how bromelain is a proteolytic enzyme, and they gave it to break down spike proteins, curcumin to reduce the inflammation and inactivate the spike proteins, and also nattokinase, which, again, it's because it's a proteolytic enzyme. So I've been taking a lot of this stuff for a long time, and that's why I'm gradually digging out of this post-COVID, post-Lyme, post-vaccine, post-Lyme situation here. Anything that decreases inflammation for scary stuff like Lyme disease and tick-borne illness and, COVID-19 is going to be very nice and helpful for your musculoskeletal stuff. It's great. So inflammation is inflammation, and inflammatory compounds are proteins. And so if you break them down with proteolytic enzymes, it's cool. So these are all nice things that help. And then if you take herbs that calm interleukins, which is part of the cytokine family of compounds, then you're going to feel better. So that's what I want to talk about. I want to tell you about my knee. I have a little bit of, after riding my bike, I have some sore back stuff. I'll put some salve on it, and I'll, after I'm done this show and preparing for the next, I'll do some nice stretching and nice stretchy yoga and lay around, and that'll be nice. And then, of course, tomorrow I won't ride 34 miles. If I ride at all, I'll ride short and easy, and, you know, I don't want to overdo it. I did find that I hadn't been riding much, and I did a lot of riding when I was in Florida, and Florida is very flat, and so I wasn't climbing a lot of hills. And today we went to Woodstock, Connecticut. So if you've ever been to Woodstock, Connecticut, you know there's a lot of hills in Woodstock. And we climbed two roads, Barber Road and Perrin Road, two of my, oy vey, so hilly. But it's like, okay, I haven't been on my bike in a long time, and I'm climbing Barber Road and Perrin Road. You know, I was off the back on those climbs, and I didn't get off my bike. I was able to pedal over them, even though I was in the back, and I never lost sight of my crew. And I'll call that a win. it was exciting. So anyway, so that's what's going on with my knee. As far as Ron goes, Ron is gradually feeling better and better, and did this 20-mile bike ride today. I have yet to hear how it went for him, so I'm sure he'll tell you when he comes back from the Cape. And because he still, his muscles don't recover well because of the damage from the drug, and so we're hoping that the various things that I've been giving him, including proteolytic enzymes to break down the drug and things to help to rebuild his muscle tissue, let's hope that that's part of what's working. So, all right. So that's what's going on with that. It's strawberry season, which is very exciting. And I got strawberries from the farmer's market. That was thrilling. So usually I buy strawberries from the supermarket, and they're made by a couple of different corporations. Sometimes they come up from Florida. Sometimes they come from Mexico. A lot of times they come from California, and they're shipped, and they're okay. Nothing like a locally grown strawberry. Oh my goodness. So it's June 1st and the strawberries are out. And so I bought some. I just had some. I have some stains on my shirt that you might be able to see. So I'll have to wash this and get the stains out. Oh well. So I was looking at, why are strawberries good for you? My goodness, so strawberries are really good for you. Apparently, per unit volume, they have more vitamin C in them than oranges. So they're high in vitamin C, that's why they're a little bit tart. And they have a lot of fiber, so they can keep you regular. So, and all the things that vitamin C does for your strawberries can be helpful with. So that's strengthening your blood vessels, making it so that you bruise less, and good for your immune system. Possibly helpful for lowering intraocular pressure, so helping to keep you out of glaucoma, or just lowering your pressure if you have glaucoma, and stimulating your white blood cells to work so you have a better functioning immune system. So, and then also your adrenals stockpile vitamin C. So if you have regular, if a decent vitamin C, your adrenals will work better. The First Nation people, when the settlers came, settlers didn't really understand about vitamin C, and or they did, and one of the things they would do is they would carry limes and lemons on their boats when they were coming across. But of course, if it was wintertime, there's no citrus. And if you're in Connecticut, there's no citrus. So the First Nation people recognized scurvy. I don't know if they called it. They probably didn't call it that word. But they recognized when you had this condition, this is what you do. You go to the animal that is down or that you have hunted and killed, and you eat the adrenals. You eat the adrenals, scurvy goes away. The other thing you do is you eat the tips of the pine trees, the tips of the pine tree branches, because the ends of the pine tree branches have vitamin C in them. Well, guess what? Strawberries have vitamin C, but you're only going to get strawberries around here now, you know, late May, early June, you know, for a week or two, and then that's it. So yeah, so you have to chow down on your strawberries. Hopefully you're not allergic to them. So they're really good for you that way. There was some great studies about how strawberries can help to prevent heart attacks. They keep your cardiovascular health good because of the vitamin C and the flavonoids that are in them. And they can help to lower your blood pressure. They just make you happy. They you know, if you look at the Doctrine of Signatures, they do look like little hearts. So Doctrine of Signatures is where you have a plant that appears like the organ that it helps. Or if it looks like an organ, it may help that organ. So certainly, strawberries look like little hearts, and they definitely are helpful for your heart and your blood vessels. And they're the color of blood, and they help your blood vessels. They're really good for you that way. And so they're going to, not only your blood vessels, but they're going to help your white blood cells to work better because of the vitamin C. So that's whether you believe in Doctrine or Signatures or not, it's cool. It's like a cool archetype thing. And you like to think that somebody was thinking about it when we learned that, hey, this thing that looks like our heart helps our heart. And this thing that's the color of urine helps our kidneys. And this thing that's the color of bile. And that's really a thing. Dandelion greens are wonderful for your kidney health. And Oregon grape, which has, if you pull up an Oregon grape root, and you open it up, it's bright yellow, and it's the color of bile. And it's a really wonderful plant for your liver. It's a cholagog and a choleretic. It moves bile through you. So there are some cool Doctrine of Signature things that happen. Again, you could believe in it or not, but it's kind of cool, right? It's just like astrology. You could believe in it or not, but it's kind of cool when things sort of work out. And if you tend to have a certain personality and it kind of fits the astrological sign, it's neat. It's just a tool to study archetypal systems. Doesn't mean that it's the truth and absolutely true. And, you know, it's one of those things that it can be useful, and if you're not into it, it's totally okay. So anyway, all right. So what else do we want to talk about? I told you about the strawberries. I told you about the my leg, you know, helping your tendons. And kinesio tape and stuff like that. Okay, so let's talk about some other stuff. So here, there was one more talk that I wanted to review from the CNPA conference. And so I had another talk from Peter Bongiorno. He really likes to talk at conferences, because I've recapped a lot of his talks, and I really appreciate that he comes. I thought I was in school with him for a while, but I was not. He went to Bastyr. And he did a talk on sleep, GABA, which is gamma aminobutyric acid, and the microbiome. So there were some neat tidbits that he talked about in his talk. For example, one of the things that they studied for some reason, Camden, New Jersey, and Detroit, Michigan. And I used to live not far from Camden, New Jersey. I grew up, you know, maybe 30, 40 miles from Camden, New Jersey, in central Jersey. Camden, and if you're not familiar with Camden, New Jersey, I don't know if it's still like this, but Camden, New Jersey had a lot of urban decay. And they have done a lot to improve Camden, New Jersey at the waterfront. Camden is the town in New Jersey that faces Philadelphia on the Delaware River. If you stand in Camden, You see Philadelphia on the other side of the Delaware River, and you can take a number of bridges, including the Ben Franklin Bridge, to get to Philadelphia. The Ben Franklin Bridge goes through Camden. I think other bridges don't, and they go to Philadelphia, but the Ben Franklin Bridge definitely comes through Camden and goes into Philadelphia. So anyway, Camden, New Jersey, and Detroit, Michigan, he said that 49.8% of adults in those cities are short on sleep. And in Boulder, Colorado, it's only 24.2% that sleep less than 7 hours. It's a big difference. And he said there's a 3 times increase in death in people taking less than 18 sleeping pills per month. And higher doses, there's about a 500% increase in death from sleeping pills. So sleeping pills would be something like, a pharmaceutical that you would take to help you sleep. So that's going to be something like, I'm thinking of the brand names. I'm trying to not say the brand names. I can't think of the brand names, the generic names. So I don't want to say it. Think of your sleeping pills that you have taken. So I'm thinking of the actual pills that you take that are considered to be sleeping pills. And then there are things that you take like benzodiazepines, like clonazepam. And the 3 ones that I see people come in on are clonazepam, alprazolam, and lorazepam. So anything that ends in zepam is usually a benzodiazepine. And people take those because they calm them down. And a lot of the pills that you take, they work with the GABA system, gamma aminobutyric acid. Remember I told you that I like to take an L-theanine to help me calm down? A lot of the things, even the herbal things that help you calm down, they increase GABA. They either increase GABA or they stimulate GABA receptors. And the benzodiazepines, that's what they do. They work at the GABA receptors. So if you have inadequate GABA, GABA is in a pathway with dopamine and acetylcholine, and dopamine and acetylcholamine can be excitatory, and GABA is inhibitory. So if you have adequate GABA around, you'll sleep better and you'll feel calmer. And if you take things that enhance GABA, that's going to make you feel better. So a lot of the nervines enhance GABA. That's one of the ways that they work. So if you're taking a nervine, you're taking skullcap, not Chinese skullcap, American skullcap, Scutellaria lateriflora, or if you're taking chamomile, you're taking lemon balm or linden, they're going to enhance your GABA function. You can also take GABA. You can also take pharmaGABA, which is supposed to just be a more pure process of production that helps as well. So you can take straight up GABA. And so anything that calms you down tends to work with GABA. I don't know about CBD, because CBD attaches to the cannabinoid receptors, and there may be a relationship between cannabinoid receptors and GABA. I don't know, but these other things, these nervine herbs, and also when you take inhibitory amino acids like glycine and taurine, they enhance GABA. And I was on a kick where I was taking some ashwagandha. Ashwagandha will also enhance GABA. I was taking ashwagandha and taurine and glycine, and I was passing out at 8:30, 9 o'clock at night, and I could not keep my eyes open. So I'm pretty sensitive to GABAergic things, so I try not to take a lot of them. I found that if I'm really hyped up at the office, like I said, I can take 100 milligrams of L-theanine, and it doesn't put me to sleep, but it does calm me down. And that plus maybe some rescue remedy and a little bit of CBD, and that'll calm me down. Anyway, so GABA receptors, they have an ionotropic system. GABA receptors, calcium will flow in and hyperpolarize, which will help calm you down. There's metabotropic, which means they're G protein coupled, which allows potassium to flow in, which calms things down. And then there are ligands, things that bind to GABA receptors. And the chloride will flow in, and that'll calm things down. So there's the benzodiazepine receptors. Of course, the benzodiazepine receptors will be attached by barbiturates, alcohol, and propofol. Anticonvulsants reverse benzodiazepine activities. Even though they can calm down the nerves, they still reverse GABA activity. So this is a really interesting thing. Glutamate, which is an excitatory amino acid, is converted by glutamate decarboxylase to GABA. So if your body says, you need to calm down, it can take glutamate and turn it into GABA, this super excitatory amino acid. And it can take that and turn it into something that's super inhibitory and can chill you out. That's really cool. Then he talked about probiotics, that probiotics can increase serotonin and tryptophan. So serotonin is an amino acid that serotonin, if you don't have adequate serotonin function, a lot of yucky things can happen. You can have more pain. You can have more anxiety and more depression. You don't sleep well. We use 5-HTP, which is 5-hydroxytryptophan, which is, it's converted by one step to 5-hydroxytryptamine, which is serotonin. You don't take serotonin directly because it won't get into your brain, but tryptophan and 5-hydroxytryptophan will. It'll get into your brain and then get converted in your brain by enzymes to serotonin. So anyway, probiotics will increase 5-hydroxy serotonin and tryptophan in mice. And citalopram is a drug that it's an SSRI. It will help to do that as well. And if you have inadequate serotonin function, you won't sleep well. You also won't poop well. That one of the things we will give when people are chronically terribly constipated is 5-HTP, 5-hydroxytryptophan, to help them make more serotonin, because there are in your digestive system the same nerves and neurotransmitters that are in your central nervous system. So if you don't have good serotonin function, you can be anxious, you can be in pain, you can be depressed, and you can be constipated. So when you improve serotonin function, you can improve all those situations. Here's a shocker. If you get good sleep and you get regular exercise and you drink a lot of water, they help with sleep and your mood a lot. Surprise, right? That if you get adequate sleep, you feel better. If you get regular exercise, you feel better. If you are not dehydrated, after the ride, I didn't feel so good. I was sitting in the sun, which wasn't wonderful, and I didn't realize that it was actually dehydrated. I found out when I came home, because I'll just be frank with you. If you go to the bathroom and your urine isn't pale yellow or clear and it's on the darker side, you're probably dehydrated. Well, guess what? And so I drank a bunch and I felt a whole lot better. So let's just demonstrate right now. Awesome. Okay. Good Mansfield well water. All right. So the gut's microbiome changes rapidly depending on what you eat. There's another shock. So if I put some naughty abbreviations here, and I wrote, what does Ron say? Give me a D, D. Give me a U, U. Give me an H, H. If you eat a bad diet, your microbiome is going to go bad. Microbiome being the friendly bacteria in your digestive system. If you eat a good diet, it's going to get better. No kidding. So if you want to diversify, you can eat fermented foods. And cool fermented foods to eat are natto, which is an extract of soy that is fermented. And when you take natto kinase, that is an enzyme that is extracted from natto. And I take natto kinase for my various inflammatory situations. Yogurt. Really? Yes. So if you get good yogurt that has good active cultures in it, it's going to help your microbiome. Kefir is really awesome for helping your microbiome. People often don't like it as much because it's got so many species in it. It tastes very tart. But if you are not dairy intolerant, you can drink kefir. It's a wonderful thing to drink because you will get great species. And now I'm very excited because you can get vegan kefir made from cashew. I don't know if it's as good for you as the dairy kefir, but I can't consume the dairy kefir, so I don't. And so I've been getting cashew-based kefir. I'm very happy with it. It does have a lot of species in it. And my understanding about kefir culture is that kefir microbiome stays in your body longer than that it tends to persist in your body, whereas when you eat yogurt, the microbiome, the microbiota tends to go through you, whereas microorganisms that are in kefir tend to stay in your body and make you real healthy and happy. So that's very exciting. You can eat sauerkraut. And if you get sauerkraut, you can either make it yourself. Very easy to make sauerkraut. You get you don't have to do anything to it because the Lactobacillus brevis lives in the cabbage. All you have to do is bang on the cabbage. You can cut it up and shred it if you want to. Cover it in some water and some salt, and let it and put a cloth covering over it and let it sit for I'm not sure a week or two, and it will turn into sauerkraut because Lactobacillus brevis does it on its own. And if you get organic cabbage, you can do that. You can make your own sauerkraut. If you don't want to make your own sauerkraut, you can go to the store. Just be careful if you get sauerkraut from the grocery store. It might be, it has been fermented, but it might be pasteurized. And if it's pasteurized, it's not live. So you want to find live sauerkraut in a jar, in a glass jar, which you can usually get at your health food store. Sometimes you can get it at the supermarket. And that's going to have live microbiome. I'm just noticing that my hand is whiter than my arm because I'm looking at myself on Facebook Live. And that's because I was wearing gloves on the bike and not on my arm. And I did put sunscreen on, but I got a little tan. And my hands are, I have bike arms now. Yeah, we joke about the cyclist tan. Your hands are going to be white. Your arms are dark. And your neck is dark, and then your torso is light, and then you have a tan line that starts, you know, depending on how long your shorts are, an inch or two or three or four below your groin. And on years where I'm wearing different lengths of shorts, I had three different colors of tan line. And do you remember that dessert? 1, 2, 3. It was Jell-O 1, 2, 3. And you would make these three layers of various lengths of time of stirring them, blending them, and you use a mixer, right? A hand mixer. And it would be in three layers. And I was camping with somebody, and they said to me, "Oh, it's like that dessert. Your tan lines are like that Jell-O 1, 2, 3. I knew exactly what she was talking about. So funny. So that happens sometimes. So, you know, and some people care about, oh, I have uneven tan lines. I want everything to look even. I don't care. I do not care about that stuff. And somebody says, "You have weirdo bike tan lines." I'm like, "Yes, I have weirdo bike tan lines. Rock and roll. Let's have a drink." Okay. So, more stuff you can eat. You can eat miso. Miso is another fermented soy product. You can eat pickles. And the same thing with pickles. Pickles, if you get pickles that have been, that are in a glass jar and they're sitting on the shelf, they're not in the refrigerator, they've probably been pasteurized and you're not going to get probiotic benefit from them. So you have to get pickles that are in the fridge, the refrigerator section, you have to make sure that they're live. So just pickled cucumbers, pickled anything, pickled carrots, pickled onions, pickled garlic. Resistant starches will help you to provide your body with prebiotic that will help give the microbiome something to eat. So resistant starch can be found in asparagus. And boy, I went to the farmer's market and the guy I bought the strawberries from had tons of asparagus. I'm not a big asparagus fan. I'm not that crazy about how it tastes. I know it's really, really good for you. It's one of those vegetables I'm not that excited about. And I'm not excited about the fact that it imparts an odor to your urine. But, you know, if it's in something and I eat it, oh well, it's not as bad as olives are for me because I have an aversion to those, which is unfortunate. Legumes, if you do well with beans, and I fortunately do, I've been eating a lot of chickpeas and hummus. That's a great way to get some prebiotic on board, and you can eat whatever bean agrees with you. If you eat beans, and every time you eat beans, you get gas, and no matter what you do, no matter how long you soak it and salt it, and change the water and use baking soda and use kombu. You can use kombu seaweed when you cook the beans and you've done all those things and no matter what happens, you get gas. You don't have to eat the beans. It's okay. It's not comfortable to have gas all the time. And even though beans can be good for you, they're not good for everybody. my body does well as being close to vegetarian or highly plant-based. I can eat vegan food and be fine. I mean, I don't eat a lot of animal protein because, and I tend not to eat mammals because I don't digest it that well. I eat it sometimes. I'm not a vegetarian, but I do very well with a largely plant-based diet, and I love vegetarian food. So, and I love to eat beans, and I love to eat edamame. I do very well with soy. Not everybody does, but I do. I've been buying a chickpea salad, and there's no reason I should be making a chickpea salad. It's not that hard to make. Chickpea salad, I'm buying one that has some olive oil in it and has some has a little cranberries in it and some peppers and maybe a little onion. And, it has some edamame in it, and it's wonderful. So I can eat that, no problem. Green beans are high in prebiotics. So is plantain, especially if you use green plantain, which I also love. I don't eat that all the time because it's a little labor intensive. You have to saute it, but I love it when I have it. Twice cooked rice. So if you cook the rice a couple of times, so in other words, if you take the rice and then you put it in the fridge and then you reheat it, it's going to have more resistant starch in it. That's true of pasta as well. Oats have a lot of prebiotic fiber in it. So does raw potato starch. There is some GABA in natural foods. So cruciferous vegetables have some GABA in them. So cruciferous vegetables are going to be calming for you. Soybean, if you can eat them. If you don't feel well when you eat soy and you get gas or you get tired, don't eat soy. But soy is not generally bad for you. It used to be thought that it's bad for you. Just make sure it's organic because it can be GMO. It can be genetically modified. But if you do well with soy, it's fine to eat. Adzuki beans, which are cute little beans that you can get. Mushrooms, which should be cooked. Spinach, tomato, buckwheat, peas, and chestnuts all have some GABA in them. So eating those foods can calm you down. So I'm good. This was such a good talk. It's rich with a lot of information. So I'm going to pick up on this next week. So I'll give you the full Peter Bongiorno redux because I think it's important. So thank you for listening. I hope you're having a great weekend. You have been listening to Radio Naturopath. Let me get my stuff down here. You've been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician. My co-host Ron Meniza will be with me next week. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live and Instagram Live episode at Fran Storch, ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on this show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org.